Welcome to Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, where we explore how studies here are changing our world today and in the future. What does sport, science, the sea, and space all have in common? While this sounds like the start of a bad joke, the answer is actually the GB Row Challenge.
It got to the point on the boat that you felt like your entire world was in the boat, that nothing really ever mattered outside that boat anymore, because we had the mission to do, and you kind of had almost let go of all the stresses that you've got back at home.
In this episode, we'll be unpacking an exciting partnership between University of Portsmouth researchers and organisers of the world's toughest rowing race, which hopes to paint a clearer picture of the state of our seas. It's June 4th, 2023. Maggie Hodge waits with bated breath by London's historic Tower Bridge for the sound of a horn. Maggie was one of the rowers competing in last year's GB Row Challenge. Dubbed the world's toughest rowing race, teams attempt to circumnavigate 2,000 miles of Great Britain's coastline, continuously and unsupported.
We got the Guinness World Record for the fastest unsupported female team round the GB coastline in the 44 days that it took us. The previous record sat at 52 days. When we first came back, we were almost a little disappointed it took us 44 days, because at one point we potentially could have done it in 35 days, but the weather wasn't our friend on the East Coast.
Now, you might think that Maggie does this kind of thing for a living, but you'd assume wrong.
I've always done lots of sports, particularly rugby, and I recently took up rowing a few years ago. And then when the opportunity came up to maybe be join the team, I thought, well, why not? You know, I'm strong enough, I think, and I think I'm mentally tough enough. But you break it down into every two-hour blocks of what you're rowing, and then you move on from there. So while 2,000 miles does sound like a long way, it's less of a long way when you're only thinking about it into 2 to 4 hour chunks.
Amy, tell me about your thoughts of this trip.
So we're on day 43, I think, maybe even 42, and it's been an absolute whirlwind and adventure. We've had weather from every end of the spectrum. So we've had hailstone, torrential rain, but also glorious sunshine and like boiling hot days like today.
Everybody had their own motivation for doing it, and the six of us on the crew all had something different we wanted to prove, either to ourselves or to people around about us. For me personally, it was about a challenge to prove that I could do something a little bit extraordinary. I'm coming up to a fairly significant big birthday.
We won't ask which birthday, but what a way to ring it in. With an endurance challenge, there's bound to be highs and lows. And Maggie had her fair share of both over the 7 weeks at sea.
How did the race go?
So day one was fabulous. We left Tower Bridge and we got out of the mouth of the Thames, and there was a weather window we were hoping to try and get round the coast of Kent before it kind of closed in. But the unpredictability of the weather, it came slightly earlier, so we ended up having to take shelter around by the Isle of Sheppey for 4 days. Now we're still completely unsupported, we were on our own anchor, and we just had to wait out the weather. So after we eventually got on the way again, when the very strong winds died down and we could move again, we did great down the south coast and up the west coast mostly. But it was mostly then when we got down to the east coast, the wind was not our friend. And there is a point where you cannot then move the boat if the wind is too much in the wrong direction. And we had to anchor and wait at different points and wait for the tide to turn as well, to use the tide against the wind as well to sort of keep rowing.
As Maggie mentioned earlier, she was part of an all-female crew. Team Ithaca ended on a high, breaking the world record. But was it all smooth sailing?
There were some times when your alarm went off and you were due to go back out again, and you were thinking, no thank you, I'll just have another hour's sleep. But you pulled yourself up, because you had responsibilities to your team and to the mission that we were trying to have. You put back on your clothes and you go back out and you sit on your chair and you row again for another 2 hours.
These are our sleeping quarters. As you can see, quite snug. But there's three of us where we have to sleep in here. We just literally are like sardines. And if you move, everybody has to move.
And if the weather, if we're anchored because the tide's against us or the weather's against us, when the weather's bad, you're generally having to be inside. So you're still very close. So I think we've probably all enjoyed the space since we've got back, but we are still all in touch with each other regularly on our WhatsApp groups. And these girls will be in my life for life. But we also respect each other's personal space as well a bit more.
As well as completing the grueling challenge, which is an incredible feat on its own, the rowers were also collecting scientific data for University of Portsmouth experts to help study and map the health of our oceans. And that's where PhD researcher Laura Fantuzzi comes in.
I started scuba diving when I was 17 in Malta, in the Mediterranean.
Nice.
And it just hooked me. It just hooked me. And I've just been scuba diving since. In the UK now, mostly. It's not as clear, but it's still so interesting. And even when I can't see anything, I've dived in like 50 centimeters visibility, and just the feeling of being underwater and being at sea, and it's just amazing. Recently, actually, I was diving off Selsey, and we saw a few rays or skates, and one of them was quite big, like maybe 2 meters wingspan. And it was sat at the bottom, and we were in the current with my buddy, and we kind of hung onto the rocks to observe it. And this one didn't swim away, and we could see its eyes follow us around, which was really, really cool interaction.
Laura recently joined the University of Portsmouth to help analyse the enormous amount of data gathered by the rowers.
I've always been really keen to share scientific knowledge and practices and the way of thinking associated with that with anyone interested. And I've always also been loving the sea and active and outdoorsy. And so combining the two with this project was really unhoped for me. So as soon as I saw it, I went on to it.
So we know the goal is to map the health of our oceans. But what exactly is the team looking for, and how are all these samples and insights gathered?
So we have a mixed bag of parameters that we're looking at, which is another exciting part of the project. We're looking at microplastics, we're looking at environmental DNA, underwater sound, temperature and salinity. So we have 5 parameters, and that was determined based on what is novel in terms of scientific data, what is relevant, what we don't have, you know, what would be useful to have, what instrument is possible to make to fit those parameters, and then what fits on the boat and fits the power requirements, space and weight requirements on the boat. So we also needed something that would be usable by non-specialists and easily fixable at sea. So a huge mix of requirements that in the end ended up leading to that research package.
The boat was specially fitted out with lots of different scientific equipment. And it is unusual to get a boat that's set up like that. I mean, the RoGB boats are unique in that fact. We're out there in the middle of the ocean. We're not powered by anything that is going to create fumes like diesel engines, anything like that. Everything was run off of solar panels and batteries. Therefore, we're not adding to anything that's in the sea. Therefore, we're an ideal vessel to collect data. And like the noise pollution as well. You know, I always think they have boats that go out and check for noise pollution, but they're probably producing noise pollution themselves. And the only pollution that we would be having was the noise of the oars rowing and maybe somebody snoring as they're having a sleep.
If you're enjoying Life Solved, the research podcast from the University of Portsmouth, then you might like one of our other episodes. Now, in our 14th series, there's a wealth of stories to be explored and information to be understood over more than 100 episodes. Back in 2022, we caught up with Professor Faye Cathero, lead scientist for the partnership between the GB Row Challenge and the university, which you've been hearing about. May explains how their data can be used as an opportunity for policymakers to take notice and take action on the global plastics crisis. That episode, titled Mapping Microplastics, is available to stream for free wherever you listen to your podcasts alongside all the others. Just search Knife Solved. So far, we've heard from Maggie, our multitasking rower, about her grueling but exhilarating journey around the Great British coastline. And we've introduced you to the scuba diving researcher, Laura, who has been tasked with analysing data gathered by Maggie and her team. They told us what they were looking for and what methods they were using in their search, but we've yet to find out what they found. And no, it wasn't the Lost City of Atlantis or a pirate's treasure trove.
We didn't have any coherent data set for the entire coastline. And so what we found is that actually, with all these locations, there's quite a huge range. From in some locations, the samples return no plastic. And then in others, like the Thames, it returns the highest rate. So which is like from 0 to 100 pieces in a cubic meter of water. So from 0 to 100, like, it is quite a huge diversity. And then from this year, it's still, the sample analysis is still ongoing.
Scientists also collected samples of underwater marine sounds, thanks to a partnership with the university's Institute of Cosmology and Gravitation. Laura explains what they discovered.
So they found some engine noise, the sounds from the oars, some music from the speakers, dolphin clicks, and some dolphin whistles, but the whistles are supersonic, so we can't hear them. They're high in frequency, so we can't hear them. So you can see them with the processing through a spectrogram, it's called. They found some strange beeps at a certain frequency, like 3 in a row, which we think is like either some naval radar or something, or some fish tag, which is a small acoustic tag that is fitted onto fish species and cetacean species to locate them and map their movements.
And it's not just the science that caught the team by surprise. Maggie says she was blown away by the wildlife that also call Great Britain their home.
In our training before we started, I think we knew we were going to see lots, but I think what you're taken aback with when you see it is the beauty of it. So you can be really complacent about, oh, look, there's a dolphin. You see it if you go on holiday. But actually seeing a pod of dolphins come around and playing with the boat almost and the wake of the boat and coming up and like looking up at you, coming up and looking and going underneath the boat to have a good look at you, there's something quite special in that. But also the interaction we had with the seagulls, we laughed and used to call the ones particularly in the South Coast Bob, because they kind of bobbed past us. But they would fly past us. You get the odd one that would fly past us and then be about half a mile in front. And then they would just sit there and they'd watch us, and we'd row past them and they'd watch us. And then you'd watch the same seagull fly past us again, land in the water and just wait for us to pass us again. And that, I mean, entertained us when you'd be talking about, oh, what's Bob up to now? But then how the other types of seagulls, because there's obviously lots of different seabirds all around the country, and how they interact differently with us. I think one of the girls got a little bit dive bombed by a seagull in the north of Scotland.
Really?
And then the puffins, and seeing the puffins. I didn't realise that puffins, you can find puffins in the UK all the way down nearly to Flamborough Head. I just assumed puffins must be off the west coast of Scotland because people talk about St Kilda puffins. But there were loads of them, but you have to open your eyes and have the time. We're not travelling incredibly quickly most of the time, so you have time to watch and just see what's happening, and that was very special.
So we've mapped microplastics, captured the sounds of the sea, and met a friendly seagull named Bob. But what is the team hoping to do with all this newfound knowledge?
So the pollution data, I think it's important to know about it so we can predict what kind of effects it can have on the wildlife, because the wildlife and the biodiversity is the base of all the ecosystem services. So the benefits that we derive from the marine environment, fishing, stocks, currents, all the benefits that we derive from the ocean basically are dependent upon suitable, livable conditions. So we need to monitor those conditions to ensure that life can thrive and that we can then, our society can thrive.
As you can hear, there's a lot on Laura's plate over the next 3 years. And you think she couldn't possibly squeeze anything else in, right? Well, unless that thing is signing up to compete in next year's GB Row Challenge.
I was invited to a practice row from a team that was going to do it in 2024. And I joined because I've done some rowing before and I love being at sea and whatnot. It was a sunny weekend, so all the positives. And then I just fell in love with the women in the team, the kind of ideas that we had, and I just got kind of convinced to do it. And somehow it turned into a seemingly good idea. I think what excites me most is like the discovery. When else will I have a chance to go around Great Britain and see all this coastline and all this wildlife? And I know from diving that I love interacting with wildlife. And so when you described interaction with the seagulls, I just love it. I love it. I also want to promote the slow and local travel and adventure, because you don't need to go at the other end of the world to have an adventure. And I think what a lot of people look for and are missing right now is the kind of presence and the feeling that you're part of something. And you can have that when you take the time to immerse yourself in nature, and that's all you can do on the boat. It's just, you're just part of the sea in the boat, like Maggie said.
You have to go with the rhythm.
Anyone else feeling a little inadequate at the moment, or just me? But in all seriousness, you can understand why Maggie and Laura go that extra mile, quite literally, to protect our beautiful coastlines.
There are lots of moments, particularly the wildlife and seeing the animals and the dolphins on the south coast, seeing the seals. And the seals would pop up and then just follow us for a bit, and they were really cute. And it's just hilarious watching puffins. They're just not very graceful trying to take off and land, but they were also very funny to watch. You know, we are all living in this environment. We all want to continue using the sea. You know, it's our coastline, it's our sea, our waters. And, you know, we want it to be clean for the next generation, the generations afterwards, so they can do it. So while, you know, there was lots of things going on and we were also doing it for a charity, plus the rowing itself and the world record, it was equal as important to make sure that the data came back as clean as possible.
The GB Row Challenge is a great example of how science and sport, two seemingly unrelated areas, can come together to make a real-world impact. Something we're really passionate about here on Life Solved. The result of this project will be arming us with new knowledge and strategies to help ward off the disastrous consequences of pollution. And even if you're not keen on the idea of competing yourself, like Laura and Maggie, you can still help turn awareness into action by supporting partnerships like this. Thanks for listening to this episode of Life Solved. You're very welcome to be part of the discussion. Email us at lifesolved@port.ac.uk. That's lifesolved, one word, at port.ac.uk. Tell us what you think and make suggestions for future episodes of Life Solved. And we'd really love it if you clicked follow on your podcast app so you never miss an edition. We'd really appreciate it if you left a rating or review as well. It helps us get those conversations into more ears around the globe. If you've been inspired by this episode and want to support our work, including the research partnership with the GB Row Challenge team, then head to port.ac.uk/lifesolved to find out how. You can also find out how to work or study with us. Bye for now.